Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Nagler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. It is Thursday, and the Packers have announced the changes to their coaching staff. Some might say finally have announced the changes to their coaching staff after many of their peers around the league had their staff changes out. Well, around the time of the combine, but you know, the Packers, they're going to take their time. They're going to make sure their T's are crossed and I's are dotted. And they finally released the names, most of whom we already knew about heading into the this portion of the offseason. A lot of it has been reported on, but the Packers did make it official today and thought we'd go over it real quickly before we get things kicked off with your questions and comments. Hope you're all doing well. Good to see everybody chiming in already. Here it is in release form. The Packers have hired DeMarcus Covington as their defensive line slash run game coordinator. Luke Getsy as senior assistant. I do find it interesting that it's listed as senior assistant, not senior offensive assistant. Although, of course, he is an offensive coach. We know he worked on the defensive side of the ball last year late in the season. So something to note there. Corey Harkey as special teams quality control coach. Jeremiah Colone as offensive assistant. He's part of the minority fellowship. Jeff Koons as defensive assistant and Jamal Lett as defensive quality control coach. And as I know, Tom Silverstein first reported, they have promoted Sean Duggan to linebackers coach and Sean Mannion will be the quarterback's coach. Big shoes to fill for the retired Tom Clements. And they have moved Connor Lewis to pass game specialist slash game management. Obviously, Matt LaFleur made those announcements earlier today. Connor Lewis, all eyes on you, buddy. I mean, we all know that Connor's been in the headset, so to speak, kind of party line on game days already. But good to see him maybe taking a little bit more of a role when it comes to game management. The end of that Bears game in Lambeau rings throughout the offseason. And maybe, you know, may let LaFleur kind of grab on to the fact that maybe he needs someone to really oversee that part of the game. But yeah, there it is. We finally got the coaching staff changes officially. Now, you know, are there going to be monster changes that are noticeable because of these shifts in responsibilities and or new faces in places? I doubt it's going to be overtly noticeable. I will say, though, I am fascinated to see how Covington approaches coaching a defensive line where so far, obviously there will most likely be additions in the draft, at least one or two, but there have been no material additions. And it is very clear, given how often Brian Kutikunst has reiterated the fact that he believes they have enough on hand to do what they need to do up front, he is obviously going to be under a microscope. And it is going to be somewhat fascinating to watch how he approaches this job, especially once we get out there at Ray Nitschke Field later this summer when the pads come on and we want to watch these guys win some one-on-ones. Because for all that they may want to say internally about Rebrovich and the lack of production that his guys got throughout his time, both as an edge coach and then as a guy in charge of the entire defensive front, I mean, at some point, you got to win a one-on-one. And I understand you want to teach these guys to set guys up and have counter moves and things like that, but you guys know how I come down on this. I mean, ultimately, it is the player's responsibility to win that rep. And way too often last year, we saw guys unable to win that rep. Now, yeah, coaching is a part of it. No question about it. That's why the hope here is that Covington can light a match a little bit for these front four players. But, man, at some point, these players are the ones that have to do it. So just something to keep an eye on throughout the summer once we get those popping padded practices going at Ray Nitschke Field. Good to see everybody chiming in. Siggy, how are you? Dennis, hello as always. Jim is here. Of course, Guitar Ted, always good to see you. Before we get going, got to remind you, yesterday we dropped the 2025 edition of the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide. If you haven't picked yours up, there is a link in the description of this video to do so. And here is some fine work from Tyler Herrick to entice you to do just that. Who are the Green Bay Packers going to draft? Find out from the original draft guide by fans for fans, available from Cheesehead TV for the 15th season in a row. Hundreds of prospects analyzed with an eye towards their fit with the Green Bay Packers. We've got mock drafts, big boards, featured articles, tons of content for you, the Green Bay Packers fan. Get yours today. If you're a Packers fan on the internet and on YouTube, which I assume because you're here that you are, you're probably going to be seeing a lot of that ad. So buckle up and get the Cheesehead TV draft guide if you haven't already. What's going on, folks? How we doing? We got people chiming in with super chats already. What's going on, Joe? Can Mannion knock some of the Favre out of Love? I don't know how much you want to knock out. I understand the turnovers are, you know, undesirable, right? But we talked about this a lot last year. I don't mind it. Yes, he absolutely needs to learn impulse control there, as far as if there's a guy in your face, you know, it's better just to eat it than to heave it. But overall, there are still plays to be made downfield that don't get made unless Jordan Love has a little bit of that Favre in him. It's a fine line to walk. And yes, I think Mannion will most likely be, you know, harping on the need to take care of the football. But you never want to neuter a young talent. And that is exactly what Love is. And I do think it is a tricky proposition. I don't think it's as simple as knocking, you know, the playmaking aspect of his game out of him. You want to embrace that part, but have him just be a little bit more judicious when he takes the chances that he takes. Jocelyn, how are you? For the Watson MVS role, what about their absence hurts the offense? Speed kills and that's it? Doesn't seem to be one-for-one replacement in the draft. Curious how Matt LaFleur adjusts since he knows nine is out. Jocelyn, that is something that Justice Mosqueda and I talked quite a bit about in the lead-up to free agency and or the opening of the new league year so that teams could trade, because of, you know, obviously Justice was a big fan of the idea of getting DK Metcalf. But we talked a lot about this as far as, yeah, you're right, this draft does not present a lot of opportunities to replace that skill set. And there's no doubt that it's not as simple as you need a guy to run a nine route. And you don't have to look much further than that being the case than Bo Melton being involved quite a bit more after Watson got hurt. And I know that's the obvious place that people point to when, oh, you need speed. Well, here's a guy with a fast 40. Just put him in there. It's nowhere near the same because of all the things he doesn't do that Watson can do. And that's not to denigrate anything that Melton brings to the table. It's just a very different type of player. The way they both eat up cushion. When I say they both, sorry, I mean MVS and Watson, because there is that type, right? You heard a lot when Watson was drafted about how, I mean, you might have, you probably did, about how similar he was to MVS as far as his stride, right? And his ability to destroy cushion. And if there's a guy playing 2-3 yards off the line of scrimmage, those guys ate that up real quickly. And it doesn't take them many steps to do it, right? And then that changes how a defensive back has to, may even a line pre-snap, but then play you off the ball. And safeties or defensive coordinators calling for safety help in certain situations, et cetera. All of this to say, then you also have to win at the point of attack in a way that Melton really doesn't. And yes, Watson has been up and down in that regard, but you've certainly seen his ability to do so. He hasn't been nearly as consistent as I think most people would like, but he's certainly shown that he can do it. That's not a trait that Melton possesses, or to your point, most of the guys in this kind of draft class. And that doesn't mean there aren't guys that can get deep, and that doesn't mean there aren't guys that can win contested catches. It's just a combination of all of those things. And then you add in the fact that both MVS and Watson were absolute dogs in the run game, and their ability to hold an edge and create running lanes on the perimeter for whoever is back there, whether it was Aaron Jones a couple of years ago or Jacobs and company this past season. All of these components, that ability to be as good as you are in the run game, but also scare the hell out of a defensive coordinator, is a very rare thing, and it helps keep you on the field. And it makes it a lot easier for the offensive coordinator, makes it a hell of a lot more difficult for the defensive coordinator to key in on, oh, I know that guy's out there because they love to run him on the nine, and that's all they do with him, rather than, oh, well, this time he might be locking up my corner in the run game, or wait, he looks like he's blocking initially, now he's running a slant on an inbreaker and going for a big game because I had that safety way deep because I thought he was going deep. There's just, you know, many levels to it that, you know, there, that is the trick where you talk about what LaFleur and his offensive staff come up with this season. I think you're going to see most likely the backs and tight ends get a lot more involved in the passing game. simply because you have to kind of turn to guys where you can take advantage of defenses and hopefully some mismatches. And I do think that's an area. You heard Matt LaFleur unprompted talk about getting Marshawn Lloyd involved in the passing game when he was at the coach's breakfast the other day. Things like that, they're going to have to look for those types of matchups where hopefully they can get guys in space, maybe get Tucker Kraft more involved, maybe get Musgrave a little bit more involved downfield, where they can hopefully, and you're never going to replace or replicate what those guys did, but you know, ease the burden, so to speak, of not having that element in your offense. And Jocelyn, I know I've talked quite a bit now for a long time, and I've really only begun to scratch the surface of answering that question. But that is a very rudimentary kind of look at the thing you're talking about. And look, it's not easy. And it is a monster component of what Matt and his staff are working on this offseason. And it's twofold, right? Because you've got to look at all the ways they kind of stubbed their toe in the passing game last season when they had a certain kind of value with Watson on the field. But then you've got to not only consider how do we move forward and build off things that worked and all the stuff that we know we can still utilize, but now you also have to do so with also knowing that you do not have that component in your offense whatsoever and probably won't for the entirety of 2025. And I know LaFleur and Brian are talking about, oh, Watson could still, you know, contribute in a big way sometime this season. And maybe he does, but you cannot count on that in any way, shape, or form. Even if he is back by week 12, we have seen it time and time again, guys coming back from an ACL injury. It's great to get him out there and you definitely hope he can be productive, but it's usually at least a year past them getting back on the field that they are back to 100%. So again, long-winded way, and it's to say all this, and it's still not even really diving that deep into it, but that is a surface level answer to your question, Jocelyn. Brandy, how are you? Thanks for the super chat. Finally, the run game coordinator has to plan all these runs. Thinks James Campen was bored under McCarthy in the run game. I know it's kind of flipped on its head, right? The run game coordinator is a little bit more involved than any passing game coordinator in Green Bay. Hey, that's old school. I love it. I mean, I'm somewhat joking, but you know, the key to this whole thing is marrying the two and getting the passing game working because you have a successful running game, which is something they just did not do last year. Greg, how are you, man? Thanks for the super chat. How much input do you think Halfley had on the D side of the coaching staff? Are any of these guys his guys? Well, Duggan is the linebackers coach. He was with Halfley back at BC. Other than that, I'm not quite sure that there's any kind of crossing of paths, although there might be. It is Matt LaFleur's staff, and any final say on who is or isn't hired is on Matt. But I got to believe that, yes, Halfley is undoubtedly involved, certainly in the search process and the interview process. But the ultimate decision to pull a trigger on a hire is Matt's. It is his staff. But like I said, Halfley undoubtedly has input. Jason, how are you, man? Bring in Clay to teach these boys some pass rush moves. Jason, don't get this going because, you know, we just got the announcement of the coaching staff and there is no Clay Matthews. There is no David Bakhtiari. So the folks on Facebook can just be quiet about all that now. You hear what I'm saying? You know who you are. FMCH, long time no see. How you doing, man? Nags, do you think we'll ever see a defense comparable to the 96 defense? I mean, that's asking a lot, man. Two Hall of Famers and Reggie and Leroy. A absolute stud defensive coordinator like Fritz Schirmer. And I mean, those are just the marquee names. I mean, they've got talent, all three levels, great players all over the place. That's a tough ask. I will say the closest they've got probably since then, it's not even 2010. I think it's the kind of back half of 2014. That defense was fucking legit, man. That's as close as I think we've seen. And of course, 3-4 versus 4-3, different style, etc. But that was a championship defense, a championship level defense. That's been a rare thing in Green Bay. But yeah, 96 equaling up. I don't know, man. Tough to see that. Tough to see. Not to say it's impossible or it'll never happen, but yeah, that's a tough bar to hurdle. Yeah, Mr. Tundra, yes, of course. Gravedigger, of course. Don't forget the Gravedigger. I mean, that's what I mean. Santana Dotson. I mean, there's so many players. Jones, the whole front was insane, you know? Greg Newsom. I mean, there's so much talent there. It's insane, right? So, yeah, it's hard for me to see a team like that as talented and as well put together and completely dominant as they were, you know? It's just, it's hard to see that getting replicated, in especially in the modern era, where, I don't know, there's just way too much player movement for that to happen. Steven, now that's doable, I think. I'd take a defense closer to the 2010 defense. I think that's something that could potentially happen. They could have a defense of that ilk. I think they could have it under Hafley, maybe even this year. That would not surprise me. But 96, that's a tough one to see. Complicated fellow, that's a fun idea. When is draft definition day, where you inform the masses what a term means, described by announcers? Draft picks, heavy hands, heavy anchor, stiff. That's a fun idea. I think I'll find a draft nick and we'll go through it. That's a good time. That's a good idea for a video. So I'll hopefully get that to you next week. That's because you do hear that, especially once the draft starts. And by the time they get to like the third round, you've heard all of those phrases a billion times. And they do kind of run all together, no doubt. Dale Norton, good afternoon. I just wanted to highlight Dale because Dale, in years past, it's always been good afternoon or good evening from a certain location. As of late, you haven't been offering that up. I understand you're probably in like a very sensitive area with a CIA mission or something, but good afternoon from New York City. I hope you're well. I hope you're doing okay. Mastodon, exactly. Wayne Simmons took souls. Precisely. Jim, the draft cliche complex. Yes, it is a lot of that. And, you know, I mean, at some point you are talking about what you see on the tape, and it does become somewhat shorthand, right, for certain aspects and traits of that prospects have. And that's very real. But if you're not versed in the lingo, you might kind of be eyes glazed over, which I totally understand. Absolutely. Joey, you're not alone, sir. I could really use a certain Cheesehead TV cream ale now. If only there was a way to remind you about what it's called.
Well, we carry the G wherever we may be. So creamy and cold, and from the land of the green and gold.
You know what? Speaking of Carry the G, you'll be able to get some Wednesday night before the draft at Stage 1 downtown in Green Bay. Wednesday, April 23rd from 8 to 11 p.m., Carry the G specials will be on offer. We'll have Cheesehead TV giveaways, some special Packers guests stopping by through the night. Come on out, hang out with myself. Corey will be in and out of the proceedings. He's got a lot going on. You want to talk about a man who is busy during the week of the draft? Corey Banky, ladies and gentlemen. But come on out, Stage 1 downtown Green Bay, Wednesday night before the draft. Most importantly, you can get some Carry the G, which I got to be honest, that is probably what I am most looking forward to going back to Wisconsin, is getting myself some Carry the G, because I cannot get it out here in New York, which is a travesty. Craig, where are we in the pet dog situation? Craig, did you not see the video that Olive put up where she said she didn't want a dog anymore? She wanted a guinea pig or a rabbit. And I'm going to tell you right now, that ain't never going to. So, but I did just get her a computer, so she's going to be all right. Here we go. Brandon, I'm glad you brought this up. Ja working out with X the other day. More than a 0% chance Ja's back? Well, yes, there has always been more than a 0% chance. It's sitting at 0.47382% as we speak. Now, maybe we get that bumped up to a full 1% chance with another workout video. But that's where we're hanging right now. That's where it's dangling. Abdul, how are you, man? Haven't seen you in a while. How you doing? Hey, Aaron, were we good? The season feels like a distant memory. I remember us being good, but was reminded we were 0-6 against winning teams. Well, the winning teams thing is disappointing, no question about it. And it is frustrating when you can't beat the teams in your own division. And they were close to being 0-6 against the division, other than a miracle block kick against the Bears there at the end down in Chicago. But yeah, they were good. They were a good team. They definitely lost the plot there at the end. Certainly losing your last three games is going to stick with you for the offseason, right? But yes, they were a good team. They won 11 football games. And I understand, especially in the big marquee national spotlight contests against better competition, they came up short. No doubt about it. A lot of that was them beating themselves. Go back and watch those games. I know it takes a certain level of masochism to do that, but go back and watch that Minnesota game where they fall behind 28-0. And much of that is because of errors they make. And look at the game in Detroit, that Thursday nighter, all the buildup, and they promptly have a sack on the first play of the game where your best offensive lineman gets beat in Zach Tom. And then two drives later, Christian Watson puts the ball on the ground. Look at the game in Minnesota, right? Very first drive, your best player on offense, you know, Jacobs puts the ball on the carpet. You can't win that way, but you're beating yourself. Teams are too good for you to beat them while also beating yourself. Yes, they were good. They were inconsistent, but they were good. She said, Joey, how are you, man? Packers Hard Knocks this year? I'll tell you what, now that the NFL has adjusted the requirements and or rules around who they can compel to participate, they are 100% in the mix for Hard Knocks. And I know Matt LaFleur has on the record stated he has no desire to be involved with Hard Knocks, but the league can now tell them, well, you're doing it. And you got to think the league would love to have those cameras in Green Bay. Now, perhaps because the draft is in Green Bay and they have handed them this big bouquet the league has to Green Bay, maybe the league turns around and says, now we did you this, we got you this, you're going to do this for us, and you're going to host Hard Knocks. But I also think there's a chance that they look at the fact that Green Bay is going to get all this exposure because of the draft, and they're going to want to go elsewhere for Hard Knocks. That's the one hope if you're Matt LaFleur, right? But don't get it twisted. Unlike up until this year, they could not compel the Packers because of the rules that were put out. They, you know, if you have a first-year head coach, you can't do Hard Knocks. Well, they don't have a first-year head coach. And before, it was, you know, you had to be 2 years removed from the playoffs, and then you could be compelled to do. Well, the Packers have been making the playoffs, so they haven't had to worry about it. But now, though, all those limitations and stipulations have been stripped away, and the league can 100% tell the Packers, you're doing Hard Knocks, whether you like it or not. So stay tuned. Go Pack. This is a great question. Do you think our pass rushers are good enough? This is a great question. For the most part, yes. I think a big key is Lucas Van Ness. And I know people are probably real sick of hearing about and talking about Lucas Van Ness. I know I somewhat am, and I know Corey definitely is, as he made very clear on Happy Hour the other night. But he is a big component and a big key and a big investment who has not produced. And I understand there is an expectation when you draft a guy as young and raw as him that this is probably going to take some time, right? That's why this is such a big year for him. But across the board, yeah, I think they do. I think without question, guys like Rashawn Gary, Enagbare, even some of the undrafted guys, you know, I think even like a Mosby, they've certainly shown that they can get it done. They can rush the passer and they can win some one-on-ones. They have to do it consistently, though. And that's where it's really come up short. And I think guys like Devontae Wyatt can do it. And I think Carl Brooks can return to form. But I also think they will certainly be adding to that rotation in the draft. I'll be shocked if they don't. I mean, I underline, italicize, shocked. All right, buddy, I'm going to have to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor and hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.